1290. Stay tuned.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel. I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Hokas, Pierlofan Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we are with someone that will help us get to the center of our educational experience. We have with us Dr. Phil Hampton, a professor of chemistry and interim director of educational partnerships at CSU Channel Islands. He's also a science wizard and director of the Ventura County STEM program. Welcome.
Welcome. Thanks for having me, Neil.
So we could spend the whole show talking about your various titles.
Yeah, I suppose that interim one is a little bit an odd one, but looking to partner with people.
Well, I think the most interesting one is I've never interviewed a wizard before.
You know, I don't know who put that one on there. I think that's our communications and marketing person. My only acronym around the campus is the other Dr. Phil. So that's how I go by.
So what is, but are you in any way, you have some all kinds of interesting stuff that I've never seen before, electronic stuff you brought with us. Is that part of your wizardry?
Yeah, so every year I run an event called the Science Carnival, and it's actually coming up on November 4th. And so about this time of year, our house gets crazy with all kinds of contraptions. I've got a 3-octave banana piano in my living room, and this is a theremin that we'll be playing a little bit later on.
And the idea behind the science fair is to engage younger people in the STEM fields?
That's exactly right. In fact, we've added an A, and so it's STEAM fields. So science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. And so encouraging kids from all interest levels, whether they're interested in the arts and have a passion for inventing things. So the event's the Science Carnival, and about 110 different hands-on science activities for the public to experience.
Now, you're a professor at a university.
That's
and
right.
Yet you are working diligently with young children. So I guess you see the nexus between the kids coming up and those that will eventually enter a CSU Channel Islands?
That's right. So, I mean, one of our jobs as educators is to kind of nurture the next generation of future scientists. And so I've had a passion since the very beginning, since I moved to the area, to try to kind of infuse an excitement towards science in kids. And this actually got started when my son was in fifth grade and came home one day and said, "Dad, I don't like science anymore." And I say, after the heart attack and the resuscitation, I asked him why, and he said, "All we're doing is taking notes." And so at that point I said, "Science is doing. Science is a verb. I got to be out there helping teachers to find ways of infusing excitement for science."
And it's also, I guess, a very difficult time for young people because in the political conversation today, we find that science is something that you can debate. The truth is no longer so clear.
Yeah, you know, and in science, it's all a matter of collecting evidence, and the evidence speaks for itself. And how you interpret evidence, I mean, there are a number of explanations for evidence. And so the kids really in the new generation of science are practicing what are called the next generation science standards, which are not what is the particle that floats around a nucleus. I mean, well, they're not tested on those kinds of questions anymore. They're actually tested on practices of thinking processes behind being a scientist. And so we got to get the kids really excited about science to want to be scientists. But you're right, the culture right now is one of science is elitist. And to be a scientist is, unfortunately, makes you subject to, well, disdain and, to some extent, uncertainty of, you know, where you're coming from.
You know, I had a difficult time in college with calculus, to say the least. And when I went to graduate school, we were studying, you know, the first and second derivative as a way of understanding growth in companies. Mm. And because it was taught intuitively,
all of a sudden, I got it.
That's right.
And when I took my first chemistry and only chemistry class in high school, the first day I remember this, he put a bunch of equations on the board.
Yeah.
Again, it wasn't an intuitive way to teach. So maybe I was before my time, but I knew it was not being taught for people like me.
Yes.
It's people that can grasp the language. Well, that's great. But for most people, they need a little bit of understanding of the relevancy of what you're learning.
Yeah, probably my favorite class was phenomenological physics, where it wasn't all the equations. It was talking about how much potential is created when clouds move across the ground and what's the energy that's generated from charge separation. So it was practical how physics applied to the real world.
Now, this is just for men, right? Because women can't do sciences?
Yeah, oh boy.
Is that what I understand? Is that...
Science is for everybody. But, you know, the sad thing is that, you know, kids at the age of 13 to 17, it's probably about 35% of boys are considering careers in STEM. But at that same age group, probably about 11%, according to this Ernst Young study, of women are interested in STEM. And so they're getting turned off to STEM at an early age. Part of it is role models, not a sufficient number of female role models that the kids can look up to, the young girls can look up to, and subtle messaging that really can turn them off at an early age.
And there's not so subtle messaging. 2 years ago, we had a guest who was a chemistry professor at SBCC, and I said, so were you encouraged at all to be involved with science? She said, not only wasn't I encouraged, but a female teacher tried to dissuade me. So it's not just sexism. Yeah. It's the sort of, at least in those days, I guess, an understanding among even women that maybe this is not the place for you.
Yeah, and I think that that's pretty prevalent to this day. We need young women to be viewing themselves as scientists. There was actually a study recently that showed that girls up to age 4, if they hear a story about someone doing something great, the girls say, oh, it was a woman that did it. The boys say, oh, it was a boy that did it, a man that did it. After age 4, the girls start attributing it to men. And so something happens at about age 4 where the power empowerment of young women can get changed and turned off. So that's why it's critical to start at an early age, get young women interested in science and keep them interested.
I'm glad that you're enlightened since the president of your school is a woman scientist. So
that's
this,
right.
This interview would not be going well
that's
if
exactly
you took a
right.
different view.
Well, one of my psychology colleagues says that psychology is the one and true science. And so I have to have a little bit of a debate with him on that one. But he's a psychologist, so he's biased.
I've had 25 years of therapy. Does that make me a scientist?
I wouldn't go that far.
So at this science fair, it's not all learning. There's some fun.
You know, actually, I like to point out that science fair is that thing you go to in high school where you work on a project, often on your own and often with parental help. And then you go and compete, and then you have a big sigh of relief when it's all over. This is a carnival, and the whole purpose of the science carnival is safe, fun, learning. So it's an opportunity for parents and kids to experience science. Parents who haven't seen a pumpkin exploding, the self-carving pumpkin, I got in trouble with the police last week on that one, by the way. But the self-carving pumpkin is a great example of the power of chemistry. And had they done that in your general chemistry class that very first class period, I think you might have had a different experience in chemistry.
Well, we had a guest on here 6 months ago who goes around the world, and he gets into a Tesla cage, and he lets electricity run through him. What's his name? He's the electric something, and, you know, kids love it.
He does it at Burning Man?
Yeah, and he's figured out how – he's a scientist.
Huh. Austin
Richards. And so, you know, there are interesting – of course, you know, this has a very capitalized below the picture, do not try this at home.
Yes. I had one of those experiences last week with a Tesla coil.
That's what it was, a Tesla coil.
Yeah.
He gets into one.
Oh, he gets into one.
He built one that's bigger than he is, and he gets into a Tesla coil.
Yeah, that's pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to spark the pumpkin for the explosion and accidentally touched the pumpkin and had my bald spot close to a piece of metal and had a really wonderful shot go through one hand and through the bald spot to the ground. So electricity flows.
So is that the chemistry building at CSU Channel Islands is off campus? now it's off campus. Yeah. It used to be on campus.
Yeah, I think they'd like to ban me off campus. I asked the police if I could do it outside, and they said they couldn't give me any permission to explode the pumpkin outside, so we had to do it in a fume hood. Call it a science experiment.
And they probably went back to their patrol car and said, who is this guy?
Oh, they know me. I'm the guy that's hauling all kinds of weird things in my car. It looks very suspicious. My neighbor, National Security Agency neighbor, has always been a little bit wondering what I'm up to.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers brand showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coramore Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226. Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Dr. Phil Hampton, professor of chemistry at CSU Channel Islands and a science wizard. So let's go back. What was it that made you want to be a science wizard? Like, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in rural Iowa.
Cornfields,
that was all that was
around. Is that redundant?
Us. Rural Iowa, yeah, there's not a lot of urban there. You're right. That's an oxymoron. So it was a small town of about 6,000 people, and I think it still is 6,000. But it was a great place to do explosions because
nobody cared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, I grew up in rural Iowa, and my father actually was a professor of chemistry at a small college. So I like to say I had the world souped up chemistry set. He took away all the non-hazardous chemicals and left me with all the hazard ones. And so, yeah, I was able to mess around with a lot of interesting things.
So you studied chemistry science right from the beginning?
For me, it was science from the beginning. We had some limestone deposits right down from the hill from our house. And so I'd go looking for fossils. So for me, science was not one discipline. It was kind of the amalgamation of chemistry, physics, biology, paleontology, and it's kind of like having the experience of being a Da Vinci early on of what science just being a mix. It wasn't any one topic. It was just the wonder of science back then.
Are we able to find a high school in that area that was able to engage you?
Yeah, we had a lot of selection in town. There was exactly one. Yeah.
I'd say that
some of the teachers did a pretty good job. Mrs. Walvotny in my chemistry class didn't know any chemistry, so I got away with hell there. We set up a natural gas candelabra one day without her knowing it and had everything shooting fire out of all these pieces of tubing and pipettes. And then there was the day that we decided to make esters. You mix an alcohol and an acid and put a drop of sulfuric acid, and you can make all kinds of different fragrances. And we took every combination we could from the back room and had the worst headache and hangover after that the next day, because we made some doozy of smells that day.
So and where did you go to college?
Went to college in Minnesota, St. Olaf College. It's in a town that's called Cows, Colleges, and Contentment. There are two colleges there and a lot of cows. Similar theme to living in Iowa.
So did you, when you left home, did you say you're going to the big city? I guess you couldn't.
Oh, and that definitely wasn't the big city. It was probably only about twice the size of my hometown in St. Olaf, but could go up to the cities. That was definitely a big city.
And at that small college, you were able to get a foundation in science?
I was. There was a real emphasis on learning there and intense faculty-student interactions. So I got to teach labs. I got to do research from a very young age in college. And I like to say I was probably the only undergraduate in college that exploded a hot plate as part of my research program. Yeah, I shredded almost an entire lab with an explosion that nobody told me was dangerous, so...
And
there's a theme here, I think.
Did you finally get, when you went to graduate school, to a bigger city?
I did. So after finishing up my bachelor's degree at St. Olaf, I went to Stanford for my PhD and had an amazing time there being in a big city.
Yeah. Oh, really? Palo Alto was nicer than some small town in Minnesota?
Yeah,
a surprise.
There's a big surprise. Yeah. I mean, you have restaurants other than Taco Bell type things. And it was such a melting pot and such a magical place to go to graduate school.
And it must have been, let me ask you this. Was it a shock to find other people equally as engaged in the sciences as opposed to where you were in high school and college?
It was a shock. I mean, when you're in college, you're an A student, you're kind of at the top there at that level. But when you hit graduate school, especially at a place like Stanford, everybody's bright. And so there was definitely a feeling of, who am I to be here at this prestigious university?
And, I guess Stanford, I don't think, would be the place that you would find similar to CSU Channel Islands, where teaching is more important than publishing. But I guess your younger days at school probably helped focus on what you do now. I guess because CSU Channel Islands is a different school. It's different than UCSB because you care more about teaching than you do about, getting a Nobel Peace Prize. And
that's exactly right. I like to say that at Cal State Channel Islands, our focus is on helping students to develop the skills to be successful. I was really proud to see two of my former students being postdocs now in big universities, Cornell and can't remember the other institution, and PhDs graduating now. I had a hand in training them. But I started off at a young undergraduate school, St. Olaf College, did the research one at Stanford, took a faculty position after postdocing at Caltech, at the University of New Mexico, and now back at a teaching university. And I really discovered that's where my passion is teaching kids and encouraging a real discovery kind of mode in the classroom.
And that's, I guess, one of the reasons why you're so interested in like the science fair and the educational partnerships that you're involved with in order to incentivize other kids to do it.
That's
now,
exactly
this
right.
Now, Santa Barbara is, and I guess the whole area, not just Santa Barbara, has a very heavy Hispanic population.
Mm-hmm.
How are these kids able to dream about being scientists when some of them have, parents that just because of financial reasons or other reasons just can't get engaged, and they don't have the tutors that I had and probably you had, mm-hmm. and your father was a chemist.
Yeah.
How do you get the Hispanic population to have a fair shot at being a scientist?
So, first of all, anything is possible. I mean, the kids that I've seen come out of our schools, some of the most talented students I've seen come out of our region. One of my students who is one of the dreamers is a graduate student going on to postdoc. Brilliant young man. I think part of it is you can't be what you can't see. And so a lot of the kids growing up, it's easy for them to see role models of a doctor, a nurse, a pharmacist who are Latino or Latina. But seeing a professional at Amgen or seeing someone who works at Haas Automation, just not visible. So one of the things that one of the hats that I'm wearing is to build out a website with interviews of STEM professionals who are Latino, Latina, African-American, who can serve as those visible role models to the kids in our community and say, look, I did it. You can too.
Is that part of this educational partnership?
It's part of that, but it's more directly related to the Ventura County STEM Network that I've been involved in, which is a partnership across our county here in Ventura County.
Right. And, you know, I want to talk about that, but I want to make it clear because one of the things that we've been trying to do over the last year with our listeners, and by the way, we do, we are heard down in Ventura, but Santa Barbara is a place heavily impacted by CSU Channel Islands, and many, many people who live here think it's a Ventura school, but it's actually the closest Cal State school to Santa Barbara, and many, many of our kids go to Channel Islands. So we want to talk about the STEM program at Ventura, the Ventura STEM program, but it's just as relevant. And by the way, is anyone invited to these activities? Even from Santa Barbara?
Even from Santa Barbara, you're welcome to come down to the Science Carnival. I'd love for more Santa Barbarans to take the not too long of a drive down to the collections where the Science Carnival will be held.
What does the collections mean? Is that a place?
It's a place. So the collections outlet mall Vineyard and 101. So it's a short drive from Santa Barbara.
Does the mall know what you have in mind?
We haven't yet told them. We warned them that there might be some parking happening nearby, but not about any of the explosions.
Well, you know, they may like it because the mall business isn't very good now. So you may end up solving another one of their problems. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear. From humble beginnings in 1973, Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers' portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226. Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Dr. Phil Hartman, professor of chemistry, Phil Hampton, professor of chemistry, and one of the founding faculty at CSU Channel Islands. And now you were a founding member. You weren't a resident there beforehand at
no,
the institution.
No.
I
can't claim to have been
asylum.
They didn't bring any of those individuals on board. But yeah, I was one of the first 13 faculty who helped found the university.
So you've seen it really change.
Pretty dramatically. I remember when I first arrived, we were able to tour the autopsy room and the morgue, and now it's a library. And touring the scary dairy, well, it's still a scary dairy, but it's transformed tremendously with new buildings, state-of-the-art facilities.
It's a beautiful school.
It's a gorgeous school. I visited and toured the campus for my interview on a day. It was a June gloom in March, and didn't even know it was surrounded by mountains and beautiful hillsides. And when I saw it, I couldn't believe what a beautiful place I had a chance to go visit
and do you get to live nearby?
I live up the hill in Newbury Park. Mm. So a lot of our faculty, though, live in the housing right in the faculty glen or the housing glen.
Yeah, there's been a lot of research about, this is across the country, about the benefits of putting in conventional housing on college campuses, because as people age, one of the things that rejuvenates them is to be near young people,
right,
to be near education. And CSU Channel Islands has a big initiative now of building housing, not only for professors, but also for anyone who wants to live there, which is a great idea for everybody.
It's a great way to fund the university, too, because when we first started, we were told we needed to be innovative in how we were funded, that we weren't going to get the same kind of level of funding for new buildings. So yeah, the Housing Authority really gave us the resources to be able to build an amazing campus.
Now, of the 13 founding professors, there were 11 chemistry teachers. Is that how it was?
I was the only chemist, and there were two biologists and one mathematician, and that was STEM.
That was the STEM program.
That was the STEM program, 4 of 13. We weren't even, a third. We were just a little under a third.
So all the other professors then call you Dr. Hampton? Or are they able to call you by your first name?
Oh, faculty call me Phil. The students call me Dr. Phil if they want to risk it. Dr. Hampton is fine, Doc. I answer to most anything.
And do you have a family that lives there? I mean, do you have kids? And
I have a son, and he's actually in the computer science program on campus.
This is a surprise.
Yeah, when we started looking at surprise. we were looking at different universities. He really wanted a small environment where he could not feel overwhelmed by large class sizes. And you know, our biggest class on campus, biggest classroom is 120 seats. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get a 400-seat general chemistry class there.
So what is the educational partnership that you're working on?
Yeah, so that's a brand new position. It actually arose out of my work with the Ventura County STEM Network. Ventura County STEM, cross-sector representation of individuals trying to improve STEM education. We're looking at trying to steal Southern Santa Barbara County if we can, too, because you guys don't currently have a STEM network supporting you. But I started building relationships with community members, educational partners, and new grant opportunities emerged as a result of that. And with the new changes to math readiness that the CSU has pushed out, where we no longer offer developmental math courses that typically are taught at the high school or middle school level, it's a key time for us to partner with the community and look at ways of enhancing education so the pipeline of students coming into college is just that much stronger and that they're math ready coming to college.
I actually never understood that initiative or rule that the chancellor of Cal State put into effect, I guess, 6 months ago, prohibiting or not encouraging remediation that so many kids need. And I was involved for years at SBCC, and at SBCC, I think 75% of the kids were not ready for college. So how do you, I mean, it's great to philosophically say we don't want to have these kids waste time with, you know, remediation courses, which get them bored and they leave. If you don't speak the language, you're not going to get much out of the teacher. So how do you make up for that?
Yes, I think we have to recognize a two-path system. And that is that a lot of majors really don't need intermediate algebra in college, and yet we're requiring that as kind of a threshold course to be able to be admitted to college. Those students who come in not at that level end up spending a semester, two semesters, probably about a third of their units as a freshman on courses that don't even carry college credit. So, I mean, the goal would be to have the students come in at the level that they need to be able to start their major. And in STEM, that's pre-calculus. So we need to keep the pipeline of students strong for STEM. But perhaps some of the other majors don't need that same high level of intermediate algebra. Maybe one of these more applied math courses, like you were talking about for your physics experience, wasn't it?
Yes.
That something like that would be a better kind of an approach with high level math skills, but more of an applied approach, and let that feed into other majors on our campus.
Yeah. Well, I hope that works. I'm, you know, not as sanguine because I think that kids at 18, 19 really don't know what they want to do. And so somebody who may not know a particular subject, you know, you may not be a good writer, but you're going to be a scientist. Then you decide maybe you do need to write. And you didn't get that immediately. And I found when I was in business, no matter what college or graduate school they came out of, almost no one knew how to write. You know, because colleges, at least back in those days, never taught writing. If you want to be a Renaissance man, you really need to. But anyway, I'm not going to argue with the president of the chancellor of your school, because I probably won't win.
Probably not.
Yeah. So what is some of your favorite research projects? What are the stuff that you find really fascinating?
So I have a project right now that I've been working on, and I actually had to shut down my research program to take this position as an administrator. But up to that point in time, we'd been researching the yellow dye that's found in turmeric root. It's a compound called curcumin. You can actually purchase it over the counter as a dietary supplement. And a lot of studies have shown its activity towards a wide range of diseases, so tuberculosis, AIDS, anti-cancer agents, a wide range, and malarial, anti-malarial, and yet the molecule curcumin is completely insoluble in water. So we spent quite a bit of time developing water-soluble analogs and started testing those towards their anti-cancer properties.
And how does the school work with drug companies? Do you have, like Harvard does, you know, relationships where you can share any venture that turns into a commercial success?
So we're still mostly a teaching university, and I think I'm starting to see faculty research projects leading to commercialization. And in fact, we'd love to take a look at partnerships where we might take products more directly to commercialized materials, because a lot of the UCs have much higher burden to be able to commercialize something. We'd like to have a much more streamlined approach where venture capital or angels could invest in a project and take it to commercialized material.
Yeah, and there are quite a few drug companies in town, your town,
yeah,
that you would probably be interested as well. So you said that you had to step back a little bit on this project because of your administrative responsibilities. What are those administrative? Educational partnership, or what is it?
Yeah, so it's probably about half to three quarters of my time is involved in leading the Ventura County STEM Network and organizing our initiatives, which are really towards building STEM mentoring in the community, getting STEM professionals visible in the community, building pipelines of additional STEM schools. We just had last week our STEMtastic event where we celebrated 12 educational settings for being high-quality STEM learning environments. So that takes up a big chunk of my time. I have another chunk of my time spent on math readiness and partnering with the community on that, and then another chunk related to Promise Pathways to STEM.
So you're for the most part out of the classroom.
Unfortunately, I am. I'm only teaching one class right now, and that's probably the hardest part of this, because I had developed a real interest in the flipped classroom and having my classroom be an environment where we didn't lecture, but instead we worked problems, and I found that it was really helping the students to be able to learn the material. But now I step aside for a while, and hopefully some of my colleagues will pick up that approach.
Okay, so, you know, this is one of the things that I guess is life. But, you know, somebody is really good at something, so they promote them into something that they're really not trained at.
And Peter Principle?
Well, not the Peter Principle. I was going to say that, but that's insulting. But, you know, the idea that the kids miss out on your creativity by having you run around Ventura, it's, you know, helping some seventh grader get interested in science. to put it in a really aggressive way.
I think I'd probably phrase it a slightly different way, and that is that I have the opportunity to take what I have learned and the practices that I've built in terms of attitudes towards teaching and try to inculcate new faculty members taking that same kind of an approach. So it's not just me doing it. Now it's others who are joining that kind of a show. Have you seen the crazy dancing guy, TED Talk, where you start a movement, how to start a movement?
No, but it's a good.
It's good. It's a good TED Talk. Guy just gets up, starts dancing, and nobody's following him at first, and then one person starts following him. Before you know it, everybody's dancing with the crazy shirtless guy. And so it's the whole thing about starting a movement. And so if I can help get my faculty colleagues to start using some of these active learning techniques, then.
So do you think it would be helpful if the three of us, when we walked out of the studio in a few minutes, we started dancing down the street? Would that create a political upheaval that would change the government?
Yeah, I think we might end up getting some people looking strangely at us, but whether we'll start a movement, I don't know about that.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers brand showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafon Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafon Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226. Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm here with Dr. Phil Hampton, professor of chemistry and director of the Ventura County STEM program. And one of the things that Dr. Hampton is involved in is, getting people really excited about science. And on November 4th, there is the Science Carnival, and Dr. Hampton was good enough to bring us today something that will be featured at that festival. So tell us about this thing that's sitting here.
Yeah, this thing. So this thing is called a theremin, and it's manufactured by Moog. Before Moog actually put out synthesizers, they built these theremin. And the theremin was developed by a Russian named Leon Theremin.
Is that how the name got there?
yeah, exactly.
I don't miss a thing.
There's a Russian version of it that was different. But yeah, so Theremin actually was someone who went back to Russia after he was trying to pitch his theremin as a musical instrument and ended up designing a bug that was in the American embassy and was there snooping on us. So this theremin actually picks up human capacitance. So when I was a kid, you have to adjust the antenna to the television to get the right reception. And then if you moved away from it, the reception would go poorly again. It was related to the human body having capacitance. So this has two antennas. One, which is a loop, is a volume antenna. The other, which is a vertical antenna, is the pitch antenna. And so when I turn it on here, I can change pitch and volume by just the placement of my hands next to this instrument.
Play something
for us.
So when are you going to turn it on? I have very bad hearing. I didn't hear anything.
Yeah. Every year I try to bring a brand new science activity to the Science Carnival. So this year it's the theremin. I'm hoping the kids are going to enjoy playing this musical instrument, making these spooky sounds. Now, you're supposed to actually be able to play it like a musical instrument and make beautiful sound. And there's some talented people who can do that. But as you can see, where your hand placement is relative to the antenna affects the pitch, and it's not easily reproducible. It changes depending upon the humidity of the air. And
is everyone exactly the same? So if I played that, would I have a different pitch than you? Or is the chemistry of each person relevant?
I would imagine that we should do the experiment, right? Mm-hmm. Do science here. But I would imagine that different human beings, different body masses, mm-hmm. different capacitance, that we'd be different. And just the placement, it's pretty sensitive.
Let's try it again.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right, so I'm going to put my hand right here.
Yeah.
All right, let's see you now. See how you can do it, Neil.
Oh, this is much, I'm much better.
Yeah, you're definitely. And what you notice is that when you take your hand off the antenna, that's the volume control, it goes loud.
So is this why when I'm listening to an FM radio and I'm not hearing it and I put my hand on the radio to see what's wrong, all of a sudden I get sound because I become part of the antenna?
You're part of the antenna. That's exactly right. And that's how the principle of this instrument really works.
Interesting that it was invented by a Russian.
Yeah. And some people think that it was the musical instrument behind Good Vibrations, but it's actually, that was an electrotheremin, which is a slightly different principle, similar to the theremin in some ways, but much easier to find the right pitch.
So the Beach Boys used something like this?
They used an electrotheremin, which operates on a slightly different principle, mm-hmm. which is resistance of a wire versus this being antenna radio frequencies.
So at the festival, kids will be able to come and play a song on this?
They will, and they'll be able to play my 3-octave banana piano that I'm building.
Okay, what's a banana piano?
So banana piano is a series of bananas arranged like a keyboard, and you'll be able to play the bananas. When you touch the bananas, it plays a note. And so you're going to be able to play chopsticks on bananas.
Oh, this is real bananas?
Real bananas. Uh-huh. Yeah, real bananas. And so, yeah, you'll be able to play any kind of music.
I don't want to ask you this, but what made you think of that as a possibility?
You know, it's amazing the weirdness of my way my brain works. Yeah.
Well, you know, there was a show, and this is before your time. I think it was Mr. Wizard or what's back in the 50s. There was a very famous scientist, and I think it was Mr. Wizard, Dr. Wizard, that was very popular when I was growing up. That made science fun.
Well, that's really what I'd like to be doing in my next life. I did a brief stint with the James Corden show as a scientific advisor, but I was in the green room the whole time, really interested in getting out in front of the audience and blowing things up.
So what's a flaming gummy bear?
Well, so a gummy bear is full of energy. You know, it's pure sugar and cornstarch, so corn syrup. You take a gummy bear and you drop it into molten potassium chlorate. Now, this is rocket fuel, essentially.
You don't have any with you here today, do you?
You know, I don't want to set your fire alarms off because this thing generates so much smoke and so much fire, and it sits there. Just keeps going for like about a half a minute.
So the flaming gummy bear is just taking the gummy bear, putting it in this solution, and then having it just...
Yeah, it just burns. So it's an oxidizer is the potassium chlorate, and then the gummy bear is the fuel, the sugar.
So Halloween is this Friday. Is there any way we could save ourselves from having to cut up a pumpkin? Is there any such thing as a self-carving pumpkin?
You sure can. Well, you know, that's what got me in trouble with the police last week. Let's put it that way. And it's the thing that got me electrocuted through my bald spots. So you got to be careful with working with this. But if you've got a supply of calcium carbide in your garage, drop a little tiny chunk, how much is critical, into water, and then create a little spark, and it'll blow the face pieces right out. We call it the self-carving pumpkin. So we carve the face pieces out, blow it up, and flames and smoke shoot out.
And if you do it in your garage, you could also blow out the garage door, too.
Yeah, and you might get a new garage out of it.
This thing sounds really interesting. You can take a 3D scanner and make someone into a action figure?
Yes, we have a 3D scanner where someone can sit down and they rotate and we proceed to scan them into a computer and then animate them. You can actually have a little character that looks like them that's walking around on the screen.
So. Is this used for movies now?
Well, that's motion capture is used more commonly these days, where you put on sensors on someone's joints and then their movement is detected. But this is actually scanning the person and then animating it.
And how long have you been doing this carnival?
It's 9 years now. Okay. Yeah, nine.
And do you have any empirical evidence as to how many kids went to it 9 years ago and are now, you know, crazy scientists, you know, inventing something that's going to blow up one day?
Well, we started off with only 250 attendees, and last fall it was 2,200.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's been a giant increase.
And is there a cost for this?
Yeah, a really expensive cost, free.
Free.
The hardest thing is finding parking, because we have parking at Pacifica High School and in the streets around the neighborhood. But, yeah, people should show up. It's 5 to 8 p.m. on Saturday, November 4th, at Rio Vista Middle School in Oxnard.
Great. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back, believe it or not, with our final segment.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coramar Drive in Goleta.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226. Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Dr. Phil Hampton, who I would give you his titles at CSU Channel Islands, but he has almost all the titles. So I think the most important one is that he is a wizard, and we've never had a wizard here before. This is, you know, an amazing moment for us.
Well, you know, and you guys now have given me that title. I don't know how it actually appeared on this, but nobody back there calls me that. Mad scientist, yeah.
So, before we end, let's get to a serious note. One of the things you've been working on is something to do with Alzheimer's.
Oh, it's just my research program of trying to look at curcumin as a potential therapy for different disease states. So, yeah, we've been researching that orange spice that you find in curry. Mm-hmm. It's well known to have a variety of medicinal properties to it. Mm-hmm. But the big challenge is that we're 80% water, and curcumin doesn't dissolve in water. Mm-hmm. So it's not a particularly good therapy if it can't enter our body.
But what makes you think this is helpful for Alzheimer's? Have you done any studies?
Well, Alzheimer's is just one in a family of diseases that we're interested in targeting. We're actually more interested in targeting the anti-cancer activity because we have evidence that it actually inhibits one of the key protein processes involved in cell division, which is these little tubules that reach out and pinch off the cell and pull the DNA apart, and now you got two cells from one cell.
So part of my ignorance, but one of the things I'm learning is the closeness in research of biology and chemistry.
Oh, yeah.
They're not really separate.
They really aren't. No, and I was just actually sharing an idea with a former colleague of mine that, you know, the opportunity to learn from nature, butterflies, for example, butterfly wings kill bacteria. It's something about the structure of a dragonfly wing will kill bacteria. And so if you look closely at the wing, there are unique structures on the surface of the wing that if you could mimic them on the surfaces of counters or devices in the hospital, all of a sudden now you'd have antibacterial surfaces by design. So we can really learn from nature. Even Velcro was taken from nature.
Is these noticeable changes in how you look at science changing the way science is being taught? So we talk about biology and chemistry being related. When I went to school, you took biology over here and took chemistry mm-hmm. over here. Are there sort of ways of teaching it together?
Well, I think that that's been the amazing thing that's happened since I was a college student. Biology was mainly back then, let's put a label on it, and then we understand it. Like, this is a thing. And it's called a widget thingamajig name. But they never studied it very much. Now, molecular biology is actually bridging the gap between the traditional biology and biochemistry and chemistry. So they really are so melded together these days that someone could be at that interface and be either a biologist or a chemist working on problems with proteins and with disease processes.
So you give an award out, the STEM Champion Golden Gear Award.
Yeah.
And who gets that? It's no chance for me, right?
No, you know, I'm unless you want to start up your own museum, then you could get it. So the Golden Gear Award is given out annually to schools and museums, educational organizations that are practicing high-quality STEM programming. So we recognize the Discovery Center of down in Thousand Oaks as one of the recipients of our Golden Gear Award. Mm-hmm. Numerous schools throughout Ventura County are recipients of it. And then one early childhood school where they're actually getting kids to come up with their own questions.
So you're really excited about this, which is really great, and that helps to motivate everyone around you. How do you keep up the energy level? How are you going to continue to be motivated to do this?
I think everybody worries, when am I going to retire? I kind of threaten it every year when the science carnival rolls around and I'm getting burned out.
But I was going to ask, when are you going to grow up?
When am I going to grow up? Never.
Not
the
retire.
Answer to that is never. I always want to be in a semi-kid state, because that's where learning is happening.
Yeah, isn't that important, particularly in the sciences, that is to always be thinking about something that, you know, not really possible, but maybe I can do it.
You know, at age two, the kids are going, why? I mean, that's a great state to be in. We too quickly shut that state down and say, stop bothering me, kid. And no, we need to really encourage that why, that wonder. That's going to lead to the next innovation that's really going to change the world when someone's asking the question why.
Well, what's really great about what you do is that back in the early 2000s, the smartest kids in many cases went to business school and became bond traders. And I always wondered how many of those bond traders could have come up with a cure for cancer had they been in science. And I think you're going to draw some of these people back into an area that's probably more productive for society. Thank you, Phil Hampton, for being with us. It was really
my pleasure.
It was really great. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education. We'll see you next week. It's